look tired here again today. I thought in that third period, you know, I thought we seemed like we hit a wall there and stopped playing for a good chunk of time in that third period. No life, no energy on our bench at a time when we needed it. So that, to me, is a sign of fatigue. It makes me start to wonder about our conditioning and where we're at there. But clearly, we've got to find ways to be rising to the occasion at the right times rather than falling flat.
Tell us how you really feel, Sheldon Keefe. No one missed a nice guy. It's the Fan Morning Show. J.D. Buckus, Blake Murphy, and old Ice Cube here, Ailish Forfar, who still has no heat in her apartment. Maybe you should borrow a little bit from Sheldon Keefe. Maybe take that energy down to the front desk today and have a little chat.
Good one. I went to my front desk, and they know the stakes. I said, "I'm giving you
they?
like in Taken when it's like, I will find you, and I will ask for heat."
Yeah,
that's me.
Here's what I promise that they don't think is that you bundled up currently the way that you look. It's not
scary.
An intimidating look. No, it's not. Like, you definitely look like you could be a member on the condo board with the Canada Goose gear. But outside of that, they're thinking, sorry, who are your parents? And you say, no, I live there. And then they're like, yeah, the boy's back with the boiler. They're kind of, we're working on it. We're working on it. I don't think they're working on it. You need the Sheldon Keefe motivation speech.
I'm worried about our condition. I'm just going to bring it on my phone and play it to them at the desk.
Exactly. So Ailish still has no heat. The Toronto Maple Leafs have no juice in that third period. It all goes away. Sheldon Keefe kind of tears into them. I thought this morning, if I was to steal from one of our members of the Roy family, I can't remember who said it, which Roy said it, but what are the normos like? What are the normies like? That's me this morning where I go, did any of the normies stay up for that game? Because if I was a normie, I'd be asleep. There's no way that I'm watching this Coyotes game. After that first period where the Leafs can't get one by this goalie that I never heard of in a lifeless building in Arizona, I'm going, that's enough sports for today. So I feel like we're probably recapping things for a lot of people. There's a lot of people who are just waking up to this morning going, how did we lose, guys? Here's what happened. The Leafs were way better through two periods. They were kicking their ass to the point where you thought it was going to be a hilarious night. Just one where you go, well, hockey is kind of stupid. This is kind of a stupid sport where one team can play this much better than the other and still lose, but they'll find a way. The third period comes. Predictably, Austin Matthews rips a goal. It's almost identical to the first goal he scored as a rookie in Arizona. And from that point forward, the Leafs kind of go to sleep. They give up another goal. Mrazek misses a poke check for the second time in a game, and Toronto leaves Arizona with their tails between their legs. It's Austin Matthews night. It's homecoming night. The only people in the building are his friends and family, and they can't get a W, and Sheldon Keefe is pissed. I don't think that he should really be that pissed. I'm not overly concerned with this one, but it is what it is. So there's your game recap. What I miss?
Austin Matthews' dad's hat. That's about it. The giant,
yeah,
Stetson.
It was a good hat.
To make sure. I love, too, that, first of all, there's not a ton of attendance there, but also, like, you're Austin Matthews. You know where your family's sitting. And the framing of, well, he wanted to know how he'd be able to spot his dad in the crowd. So his dad wears a ridiculous hat. Look, man, your dad probably should have been on that fourth line last night because, once again, a pretty big issue from the depth side of things. I thought the top, like, Matthews was so good in that game that they were basically double shifting him for the last, I don't know, 30 minutes of the game. He ended up playing almost 25 minutes in the game, which for a forward in the regular season is pretty wild. He played 30 seconds fewer than Morgan Rielly at the top of the minutes distribution for the team here. So certainly no issues with Matthews' game. But yeah, you teed it up, JD. They got goal lead. And on the other side of that, like, you can't get too upset with Mrazek, I guess. Like, anytime you only give up two goals, you're in a real position to win. But neither of those. And the first goal from Bazinga there was very unlucky, just like a weird bounce off the back end and back in front of the net. The second one was really soft. But you get one, right? Like, he's the backup goalie. You get one soft one, and you still think this Leafs team against this Coyotes team, we teed it up yesterday with just, you know, how interesting the over was potentially. You expect more than one goal out of this team, obviously, and you got goalied to the extreme here.
Yeah, you know, Mrazek, I think we talked about it prior to the game yesterday that this was an opportunity. We hadn't seen him in a while. That second goal that the Coyotes, you know, eventually win on, missed opportunity to poke check. But TJ Brody, what are you doing on that? He isn't one to kind of make those lapses, but he's calling the play. It's coming back basically a 3-on-3 rush. He points to, I think, well, I don't know if it was Richie or somebody, he points out who to cover coming in the trailer, and he's got a guy. He completely just doesn't lift his stick. He lets the guy get behind him and taps it in, and you saw his face, like, he took that immediately. Yeah. Like, that was completely on me. He was in the right positioning. He was, you know, all you had to do was lift this Dzingel's guy's stick, and boom, the game's 2-1 game, and ultimately they lose on that small lapse. And it gets me to the point of something that Keefe said afterwards, is like, they look tired. They looked like they, you know, didn't have jump. They didn't have life. And it's like, how is it? It looks like they're also mentally tired, making little mistakes like that. But I don't really understand why. They've only played 4 games in a month.
Well, yeah, yeah. And Keefe's point after was kind of, well, we haven't played a lot of games, and that's the best way to stay in kind of peak conditioning. So sure, maybe you're not ready for a back-to-back or whatever. And there was a stat that someone dropped last night that teams on a road back-to-back have only taken both ends of it, something like 16 out of 88 times. So it's a hard thing to do, even against bad competition. But
they're the worst team in the entire league.
You're the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, you, and yeah, conditioning could be one thing, but also there shouldn't be much cumulative fatigue right now because you haven't been playing a lot. But hey, Sheldon Keefe, if you want more games and you want these guys to be better conditioned, mm-hmm. I have good news for you about the second half of the schedule and what that's going to look like.
Yeah. Now you better not hear, there's too many games.
You asked for it, buddy.
Right. You asked for it. And it's not going to come immediately. It's going to come a little bit later. We did a whole segment yesterday on throwing people under the bus. I actually really like Sheldon Keefe's honesty when he has a media conference like last night, where there's just about 25 different things that you can pull. Mm-hmm. It did remind me a little bit of some Freddie Anderson games last night. The old my Freddie Anderson defense mechanisms, they perked back up after that, because Keefe does the, hey, you'd like to have one of those back, and he wasn't tested very often. But Ailish, I think you're right in terms of the second goal. He misses a poke check, but also TJ Brody makes a bit of a mistake, and I didn't see the same kind of chastising of Brody. Now, granted, Brody's had more of a season. I just thought, hey, Mrazek's already in tough here. This guy is already being relegated to a backup. He just lost his first game to the Arizona Coyotes. I'm not sure right now is the moment where you have to be saying he blew one of those two saves, that he should have had one, and then sort of casually throwing in that, yeah, well, he sort of made one save, I guess, against Kessel. Great. We asked him to make 3 saves, and he let in 2 of the 3. It was basically Keefe's quote last night about Mrazek. I would say that's as definitive as it gets if you're a Leafs fan wondering whether or not there was going to be any type of closer to a 60-40 split moving forward here. That is not happening when the head coach comes out and says that. I'll be honest, I'm not really concerned about it. I keep coming back to the thing I mentioned yesterday. The Leafs are now 5-6 without Mitch Marner. And you can say that it's a weird night against the Arizona Coyotes, and we can say that it's a little bit overstated or whatever, but that guy plays a lot of minutes for the Leafs. And you just, you really see how the domino effects of it, even getting away with having Austin Matthews play with other 2 players, just it results in some inferior play from some tough guys down the lineup. That 20 plus minutes that you can get from Marner really shows up.
Yeah, and you know what? It's been a bit interesting when we look back. They haven't played at 100% full capacity all season. And I don't think we're really realizing that until this little stretch of four games where they have, you know, the rest, they have the ability to get their legs under them, but something still isn't clicking. And I think it is completely Mitch Marner being somebody that they can rely on. But a little bit of positivity is that they should, knock on wood, have 100% healthy lineup for Saturday's game against St. Louis, because Engvall and Marner are expected to fly into St. Louis today and be able to practice Friday, and then hopefully, if all clear, play Saturday. So that might be a little silver lining in terms of we're going to get a full look at the roster, which probably means no Nick Ritchie, probably means that he gets the bump to the press box, but that's what we've been kind of looking for. What's the team look like? What are the lines going to be? Does it take more than one game to get that chemistry back? Is Mitch Marner flying out there because he has something to catch up in terms of, you know, being one of the best wingers in the league and what he provides to the team, both offensively and defensively? That's my little bit of positivity, is that hopefully by Saturday, everything's back to what we expect and we can start looking at what this team has, what this team needs moving forward.
Yeah. I don't need Marner to go out there and give me 20 minutes of brilliance. I just need to have that 20 minutes of Marner take away from those extra minutes of a Kyle Clifford,
yeah,
or an extra shift or two from a Nick Ritchie.
What about Joey Anderson?
Yeah, that's it. It's so weird. I keep expecting Joey Anderson to be somebody because of who he was traded for, Andreas Johnsson, and when he was traded for him, mm-hmm, and the amount of people that said, oh, Joey Anderson's just the perfect type of organizational guy that you need down the lineup, who can hit, who can give you a little bit of scoring, who plays with some grit, who can play for some toughness. Yeah, I'm still waiting to see what Joey Anderson does. And it's been limited appearances, but it's not a player that sticks out in any meaningful way for me. Blake, you had something on this?
Well, I was just going to say that at the point about, you know, it's not just the Marner minutes, it's everyone else sliding, mm-hmm, not even just, yeah, minutes, but sliding into a more natural role, right? So Kasha has played well enough to stay on that top six, but let's say he's the guy that bumps back down and you try to restabilize that third line. Well, guess what? David Camp didn't look particularly great last night. Maybe
he's
that
partying
line
too much because of his birthday.
Maybe that line gets stabilized a little bit. And then, you know, one of Ritchie or Anderson or both, if you get Engvall back, are going press box. And then so, you know, and then even those Matthews double shifts, you know, if you're in a situation where you want to play Matthews 24 minutes, he's playing all of those minutes then with either Marner or with the Tavares-Nylander group. And it's not like, I'm not saying that the Matthews-Bunting-Kasha experiment hasn't worked. I've thought that line's done a really good job creating pretty high danger chances. Yep. But it's a lot different when Mitch Marner's on the ice and nobody knows Austin Matthews' spots and how to play off Austin Matthews quite like Mitch Marner. So I do think there's a bit of everyone else gets in a more natural position when Mitch Marner's back as well. I do like also that despite being frozen, despite staying up till 1 a.m. to watch the Leafs get goalied, Ailish is still optimistic. Like, oh, they'll have the lineup back Saturday. And I'm just like, okay, well, who's going to be out between now and Saturday?
Yeah, no. Ailish. Yeah. I'm going to have my heat tomorrow. No. The Leafs are going to be healthy tomorrow. Good. It's all going to be fine,
okay?
You guys. Yeah.
A girl can dream.
Yeah, yes, that's all you got is hope. So I'm still a little torn. I'm still a little torn on where I want Marner to slot in when he does draw back in the lineup. To me, there is a case of continuing Matthews with those two guys, leaving Kasha up the lineup and seeing what Kerfoot looks like on your third line, and continuing to just take looks. You don't need to set your rosters when you're not even at the halfway mark yet. One of the things that this team has missed in the past is knowing what they have from a chemistry standpoint if they do need to switch things up, if they do need to juggle things. Sheldon Keefe has been a very creative head coach at times. Others, it has felt a little bit more limited, where the only move is, well, I'll load up this one line, and then the rest of them don't really seem to work. Maybe a different approach, maybe something where there is a bit more balance, especially considering that you could face a team like Florida and that has three different lines with three different impact centers. I wouldn't mind it. I'd like to see it at some point. I hope it ends up happening. One of the questions is, though, how does that make Austin Matthews feel? Because it's been pretty clear throughout his career that he likes playing with Mitch Marner. He has made it a point of his for quite some time. All the way back to Mike Babcock, when Babcock had to go out to Arizona, where Austin Matthews was hanging out in the summers, and explain to him why he wasn't playing more minutes or why he wasn't playing more minutes with Mitch Marner. There was always an understanding with Matthews that he was going to get certain things his way because he is a superstar player in this city of Toronto. A lot of people thought he was going to be the captain of this team until the other incident in Arizona that involved a security officer, that maybe that had cost him a captaincy. I don't think that that's true. That still always seemed like a bit of a stretch to me. But there are conspiracy theorists out there that think that that is the only thing he's ever been really denied as a Maple Leaf. Yesterday they're in Arizona. So it brings up the what is Austin Matthews' future going to look like a couple of years from now? His contract is up after two seasons from now. So this season and then two more after that, where Austin Matthews is a Toronto Maple Leaf. He has his record-setting contract. I got to admit, I've never felt this way about Matthews, where I just do not see him leaving. The more we've gotten to know this guy, the less I feel like there is really any threat of him leaving Toronto. Maybe if they continue to flame out here over the next three seasons, but I'm still having a tough time. I certainly don't think it's going to be Arizona. Where are you guys at right now, just as of today? Because, again, no one's going to hold you to these takes in a couple of years. Where are you at as of today when it comes to the looming threat of Austin Matthews' contract in a couple of seasons?
Yeah, you know, I feel pretty confident that Matthews loves playing for the Toronto Maple Leafs. You know, he's got everything that you would ever want in this type of atmosphere. He's got the star power. He's got the good lifestyle, I think. He's able to go to Raptors games. He's got his buddy Justin Bieber. You know, he's the face of a franchise. I think other than the captaincy, what more do you want? You know, I don't know where he's going to get a better opportunity to be a superstar and to live in the limelight. And it was funny, JD, you had that tweet last night of him, and I think it was like GQ or Vogue, and you tweeted out like, you really think this guy is going to leave and go play in Arizona? And it made me laugh because there's no chance. Like, I know it's his home. I know that he has roots there. That's great. But they were number one in our hopeless franchise draft rankings for a reason. Even though they beat the Maple Leafs last night, do you think that that is an organization that you're excited to go be a part of? Sure, there's something about turning around a place and, yeah, being the face of the Arizona Coyotes, but you're already the face of an Original Six franchise that is a legendary place to play hockey. I just don't see it. And if it was to happen, it's got to be for, you know, to go live in New York City. Like, I just, like, is that really a huge step up? Like, maybe I'm biased because I love Toronto, but I just don't see it. I think that he wants to stay here. I think that he's already set so many records and he's already had such an impact in his couple years here that he's going to want to continue that streak.
Yeah, I mean, look, if your goal is not just maximizing what happens on the ice, but maximizing your hockey legacy and maximizing your opportunities off the ice and stuff like that, Toronto is the place to be. Like, we all love where we're from, but JD, you're not doing 610 AM CKRW out in Whitehorse, and I'm not doing, you know, 96.7 Chime FM in Kitchener. Toronto is the center of the hockey universe, and if you're Austin Matthews and it's a reasonably good hockey and competitive situation, why would you go somewhere else? And I don't mean that to be all this hubris or whatever, but it's hard to, when you're at the top of the cap sheet and you do have things like basically anything you need other than maybe that C, you know, it's hard to imagine like what's missing. So I guess the question would be, you look ahead to 2024, the three guys that they have still under contract by then are Tavares, Marner, and Morgan Rielly. And that's the last year of Tavares' deal, so you expect that to not be the greatest, maybe. And I guess the one thing that could get in the way is, what does the hockey situation look like at that point? If they're, you know, if they're a first and second round team, again these next couple of years and don't have a deep run, and he questions that kind of upward mobility because he will be, I think, 27 at that point. So maybe he starts thinking, you know, hey, can I win here? But I think, you know, pretty much every box is going to lean toward the Leafs the way things shape up.
On the contrary, you ask, what is missing? I think it's that playoff success. And so that's why it's easy to say this now, but in 2 years, if they have two more crushing defeats, if they aren't able to get over that mountain that they're climbing in terms of a playoff victory, and not just a playoff victory, but a lengthy playoff run, I think that if you look at that roster makeup, no one's going to be really happy if they make it into the second round. I think you look at the competitiveness of an Austin Matthews, a Mitch Marner, who has so much to prove in the playoffs and so much riding on his performance. John Tavares, who wanted to come home and play and win a Stanley Cup, like just those three alone. In 2 years, if there's a situation where we look back and it's like nothing's really changed, maybe that's the reason that Matthews is looking elsewhere. It's the same kind of conversation with Connor McDavid. I mean, I feel like playing in Toronto is a much better place than playing in Edmonton, just in terms of lifestyle and all that. But it's kind of the same thing. Is McDavid going to want to stay in an organization in a franchise that isn't successful just because, like, he's been there and it's his place? Anything can really happen in the next 2 years. Currently, super confident that Matthews doesn't want to leave this organization. He wants to be here and play his tenure out. But there's always that chance that if things don't change with their playoff success, that you just get to a point where you're like, I need to win a Stanley Cup. Like, I need to have something to prove that my career was more than just setting lots of great records.
I don't think that happens at age 27. And part of the reason why I feel confident. Part of the reason I feel confident, though, is because Toronto, the likelihood of them still not winning a playoff series over the next 3 years with Austin Matthews under contract, the next three playoffs with Austin Matthews under contract, it does seem a little far-fetched to me. It really does. Even going into this year, I get it. There's tough competition. You could face Florida. You could face Tampa. You could face Boston. Who knows how this thing ends up shaking out? Toronto still, to me, is one of the better teams in the conference. And just, sure, ghosts aside and my own personal anxieties and weird beliefs, from a rational standpoint, this group should be able to break through. That's going to be a scenario. Matthews, we change as we get older. We can get a little bit more sentimental. We can think about going home. But there are a couple different things here. One is, last night should have been a reminder that Austin Matthews does not cure what ails Arizona hockey. Nothing on the ice is going to cure what ails them. It's the Toronto Argonauts. Really. I'm sorry, but it is. That is the Argos. You go there, Austin Matthews, and it's basically the same thing where, do you know what McLeod Bethel Thompson looks like if he comes into the room and sits down beside you, right? He comes in, he goes, guys, I'm going to be your co-host today. I'm McLeod Bethel Thompson. And everyone goes, sorry, who are you? That's what Austin Matthews is in Arizona. Basically, there are members of the Arizona Cardinals coaching staff. The linebackers coach is more famous than Austin Matthews there, right? Like, this is not a place that gives a crap about hockey. Nobody knows who you are. This guy walks red carpets with Bieber to UFC events and sits in the front row because he wants to be noticed. He's not going to go play in Arizona. That's done. That is absolutely not happening. He goes there in the summertime, goes and lives in his big mansion, has himself a good time hanging out with Paul Bissonnette and Freddie Anderson and the rest of his crew. He's not living there or doesn't need to live there to play hockey. It would be a bigger threat if he was an LA guy who grew up loving the Kings. These are the cases I've seen that make the most sense. People go, well, what about him signing in Los Angeles? And then he is a short skip and a jump from Arizona, and he's in the States, and it's a Hollywood market. I also don't see that. Austin Matthews knows what a hockey player is in LA, and that's not very big. It's not in the 90s. You're not Wayne Gretzky. You're not going to be on the box. You're not going to be on Pro Stars, right? That's not your role. That's not what's going to happen for you. So if he's realistic, that's not it. The only market that should be, ooh, this is shiny, ooh, this could be something, would be the New York Rangers. That's the only one to me where you go, hey, this has a big enough draw. This is a big enough city. This is a big enough name. If they're in some kind of an incredible hockey spot, what ends up happening here? But he'll eventually be the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's the biggest market on the planet. So it just is. It's the biggest market. It's where the stars shine the brightest. It's where it means the most. And at his age 27 season, it's really hard for me to believe that the Leafs are going to bring him a huge bag of money, offer him as much as anywhere else, and he's going to turn that down. To me, the bigger threat is not him leaving on the next contract. It's that he ends up taking a shorter deal again and then reevaluating his options when he's in his 30s. And then maybe things change if, you know, those scenarios that you guys outlined where they're still not winning, the pressure's still not working, he wants to play in the United States, some of those things. He wants just a change of scenery. Who knows? But a three-year contract should be the nightmare, quote-unquote, scenario with Austin Matthews moving forward, because he's very, very clearly a guy who will bet on himself.
I even think about New York as, like, there's way more famous people that play sports in New York. Like, you're competing with the Yankees, the Knicks, the Mets. Like, the Rangers are still a great team, but he's not even going to be on the number one team in that city. Like, the Maple Leafs are, no offense, but they are the kings of the city here. So even like stepping out, okay, you want to play in the States, I get that. You want to play in a market where New York City is a great place to live. It's still like, if you're looking to be the head honcho of the city, you're still not going to be that in New York. So, I mean, I'm also trying to think of ways to discourage him.
That's why I tweeted that yesterday, is that this guy loves attention. This guy loves being a superstar. Mm-hmm. He also fits this market to the standpoint where he's not going to get chased out of town by the media, right? Mm-hmm. Phil Kessel, at the end of his tenure, one thing, because people go in my mentions yesterday, oh, maybe the Leafs will sign Phil next year. Cheap deal for Phil. Phil's not coming back here. Are you nuts? Do any of you guys remember how he left? What his exit looked like? How pissed off he was with the media day in, day out? You really believe that Phil Kessel is going to put himself through that yet again? No shot. Some players are not built for this market. Austin Matthews is. Whenever they interview Matthews, no matter how aggressively awful the Toronto Maple Leafs flame out of the playoffs, he's there in his flip-flops and his bucket hat and mustache going, what are the normos like? What are the normos talking about? I don't really care. I'm going to go rip 40 goals. I'm going to go score the most faces in this league because I play for the premier franchise of this league.
I really want, they showed the stat last night that Phil Kessel's closing in on the all-time Iron Man streak. I want it bad for him. I think it's very much a...
Did not JD, even know he was close.
Yeah, he's played over 900 straight games. Yeah, so I don't say this comparison to make you mad, JD, but in terms of Toronto market and, like, how reputations look in retrospect, like, it's to me, kind of like the... Hey, Vince Carter ends up playing more basketball than anyone in the history of basketball, basically, when the book on him was he doesn't like the game or whatever. Phil Kessel being the Iron Man when the criticism was always like, oh, his conditioning, his commitment or whatever. I want it for him bad. I know he has to play probably another season, and who knows if that's in his plans, but I think it would be great for Phil Kessel to be like, hey, I played 1,000 straight games, eating hot dogs or whatever.
Yeah, the Phil Kessel thing, not to get too off course here with it, but it's always been one of those, really, you can't see what the other side is saying, though? Like, there's always been these two sides to Phil Kessel's, either detractors or the people that really gas him up and hype him up, and I would say I'm more on that side. But you go, yeah, Phil's played 900 games in a row. He could be the Iron Man. Yeah, it's because I really do believe Phil Kessel is one of the most naturally gifted athletes in the NHL. Truly. He is one of those guys that gets out of bed and is good at sports. He's just that guy. He's great. You know, give him a ping pong paddle, he's going to be good at it. You let him shoot hoops, he's going to knock down jump shots. He's going to play golf, he's going to be good at that. He's one of those guys. And the case against that is... Well, if you would have been a little bit more serious with your diet, with your regimen, with your care factor, how great could you have been with all those natural gifts? Who knows? Would you have gotten hurt, though, if he was pressing on some nights? Maybe the nights that he decides to take off the gas, it ends up being good. All I know is that when he applied himself at his best and was with a really good team and the Penguins, he was playing almost as well as Sidney Crosby played. And that, and I'll never forget that. So say whatever you want about Phil. When he's been at his best in his prime, he's been incredible. And at this point, I don't know how much you look at his career and go, he left X on the table. It's really hard to put it there when, yeah, he's going to play 900 straight games or playing over 900 straight games. He's going to finish where he's going to finish in the all-time goal-scoring leaders. He's going to have been a guy who is well-known because he played in Canada in a very visible place, overcame cancer, and has, yeah, win that 2016 with the Pittsburgh Penguins. So, yeah, none of us seem overly concerned about Matthews leaving. I'm certainly not. Winning is still the main thing, and yeah, I gotta believe. I gotta believe that they're finally gonna crack through with all this talent eventually. And also, that should be mentioned too, is it's probably fairly likely, if we can ever get this country back on track, Matthews will be able to recruit people here. Once those free agent dollars start to free up, once contracts do come off the books, once he is entering that age 27, 28 season, how attractive it's going to be for guys to come up and play in Toronto, and the selling point of, hey, you want to come play with Matthews? I don't see Matthews being the type of guy who goes and does the LeBron and ends up leaving to go play with a Dwayne Wade. It's just I don't see it for him right now. Not today, not tomorrow, probably not ever. Very, very low on the anxiety scale. Let's take a break. Let's come back and let's do the A-list. Before we do that, though, again, a reminder. I see a lot of people leaving reviews. I see a lot of people subscribing, especially to the first couple hours of this podcast. We appreciate that. That's always so great. So please subscribe, like, review, do all those special things. And, yeah, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. JD Bunkus, Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar. The A-list. That's next.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ailish Forfar, JD Bunkus, Blake Murphy. And if you're listening on the podcast, that's Shipping Up to Boston. It's a classic song about a city that we love and hate. Tuukka Rask.
Fuck.
Is back. What are you laughing at?
Nothing, just we love and hate. I was like, I've never had any love for Boston. I can't recall a time where I went, you know what I like? Boston. You know who I'm a big fan of?
It's a city
Boston.
Of history.
I like Boston a lot as a city.
Well, there we go. So Blake likes it.
There
but
you are.
Tuukka Rask is back in Boston. So he just signed a 1-year contract for the remainder of the season. Obviously, he's had a lengthy career with Boston Bruins. So as soon as he signs his new contract, he tweets out, where's that Bud Light addendum? And if you don't remember, he joined the team back in August and said that he would play for $250,000 and copious amounts of Bud Light. So then the Bud Light Twitter account jumps in and offers him a official contract, in quotes, that includes beer bonuses. So he gets significant amounts of beer. Not sure how much that is, but, you know, a couple cases at the minimum. When he records a shutout, says the words Bud Light at a press conference, and if he drinks beer out of the Stanley Cup. And so this is now official. If they tweet it out, it's got to be official. Obviously, he's recovering from off-season hip surgery, but he makes his debut today, tonight. The Boston Bruins are back in action, and he will be their predicted netminder tonight against the Philadelphia Flyers. So it's been quite the saga with Tuukka Rask and the Bruins. He's back, and he wants his Bud Light, so let's give it to him.
Is this the A-list? We have a stinger for the A-list. Like, what's happening here? We have, like, a lead-in. We have a thing. It's like, did you just launch right in? You went, hey, Tuukka Rask gets Bud Light. Are you on the take from Bud Light? Are you trying to come for me in terms of the pecking order of who is the person who loves Bud Light the most? There's a lot of confusion happening for me
play
right
now. Play the stinger. Whoops.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Now, it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong. Bing bong.
Bing.
What's up, baby?
So Tuukka Rask is back. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Back to the Boston Bruins.
Okay.
Did you know? Let's give you the whole story again.
Your brain is a frozen block of ice.
No, honestly,
honestly.
Truly
like
it's
over. You have you're wearing your face warmer for skiing. You're wearing the full outfit. It's a little hard to take you seriously when you are wearing this. Because I really do keep expecting you to sort of doze off into hypothermia sleep, you know, like have it be your last one. This is it. Ailish is going under. She's going to sleep. How's your cat? How's the thing? Just the update. How's things in your fridge, your freezer? Did they like if you had a Bud Light in your apartment right now,
it would be.
Is it toast?
A slushy for sure.
That's what I'm saying. It's did you get slushy Bud Light where you try to go? It's okay. It's not that bad. I don't want to waste it, but you know deep in your heart the second you're taking your second sip that you're too old for this. Just crack a different beer. Just let it go. Let the one beer go.
There's definitely some frozen brain cells. I was just too excited about Tuukka Rask that I missed the stinger for the A-list. So sorry about that, Vic.
Tuukka Rask.
But anyway.
Yeah. This would terrify me if I'm the rest of the NHL. Having that guy there now, I couldn't tell you who the Bruins' backup goaltender was. I really couldn't. Now
he's going to go on a tear for sure.
Well, it's just the depth at the position again. Is all of a sudden Boston has two guys where if one of them is struggling, Ullmark was always going to be a question mark come playoff time. I don't really think that's going to be the case with Tuukka Rask. Now you're not as worried about him getting hurt because he's going to play less the season. He's just one of those guys that I trust going into a postseason. The only reason that he left was the bubble, right? He was the famous, hey, I can't do this. Hey, you guys continue on. I'm sorry, but I can't do the bubble thing. I'm going back to my family. If we're not going back into those realities, which I can't imagine that we ever do, even with trying to protect these leagues, yeah, Tuukka Rask is a really good player. The Bud Light thing, though, God, it is just the best. It's just the best. And it's such the hockey beer too, right? Mm-hmm. It's just unequivocally the hockey beer.
Oh yeah. I've had quite a few post game Bud Lights. It just like, it's a staple, you know,
I know
it's in
but
there.
It's somehow it's just, I saw an ad. I know we're not even supposed to do it. We're basically doing a free ad for them. And this is what's so good for them, which I always find funny. They're going, sure, we'll give you a clause. We'll give you more of the product if you say it at a podium where we get free advertising from you. We'll give you that. Of course, what a sweet contract that is. But how Bud Light just did become so ingrained in hockey culture, how it became the number one beer of, you know, dressing rooms and post games and parking lots. It's a triumph story over cans of beer that literally they labeled with our country's name on it. You know, like it's a real upset story. It's a real underdog story.
I love it. It's not often that like a brand gets in on the fun, and hockey players aren't usually outgoing enough to like, I don't know, have this kind of personality. He's coming back. He's fully firing. And I honestly feel like the Bruins are going to make some sort of crazy run with him. I mean, last night, I said in my Wake and Rake section that they were going to smash the Canadians, and they did 5-1. So just a side note to
our betting segment. Oh, yeah, no. Hey, listen, you picked that, though, right? You said that they were going to smash.
Yep, sure.
So who was the trapdoor yesterday?
Definitely me. But did we expect the Arizona Coyotes to beat the Toronto Maple Leafs? No. Anywho.
It wasn't a trapdoor so much as it was when you're, like, walking along the ice. And then suddenly there's a less secure part of ice. That's Ailish walking through her living room right now.
Yeah,
of just like slipping on the ice. Oh no, I pressed the wrong button. I meant to press Boston, but my phone froze and I ran out of battery.
That's exactly what happened. All right. In a warmer sport, PGA Tour has announced that Netflix is teeing up a documentary series from the producers of F1 Drive to Survive that we all became obsessed with, and the PGA Tour will be their next type of immersive documentary series. Going to follow the stories of all the top golfers. Already started, by the way. So they've already begun with the 2020 season. They've been filming, and they have some big names accepted to this type of thing. I think it's absolutely awesome. Look at what that F1 series did to change the face of that sport, to get a lot of people interested in a sport that was kind of on the fringe in terms of casual viewers, I mean, myself included, I probably wouldn't have really got into F1 without that documentary series. And now it's something that I really enjoy watching. I think golf is a perfect next step, because if you don't watch golf, you're not going out of your way to be like, I'm just going to sit here and watch a sport that I don't really have a connection with. So getting some players like this list of names that's already agreed to doing this, to the behind the scenes access, to filming throughout the whole year, I think it's going to be awesome for the sport.
Okay, can I ask you guys a question though? Like, you really think it's going to be close? Because to me,
no, I don't think it's going to be close.
Yeah, we have golf, and part of the Netflix doc in North America was how it's a huge sport internationally. Of course, it is, but it's not that big in North America, or it wasn't that big in North America. So we were basically being exposed to this thing for the first time, where we really got to feel like we were a part of it. There's just a couple of things that F1 really has at its
money,
disposal.
Yachts, Monaco, millionaires.
But golf has millionaires. I thought the personality wise, right? At first I went, but the F1 guys are so compelling and so interesting, and golfers are all just sort of the same rich guy, right? They're all the same rich guy. And I went, actually, probably in Europe, a lot of people look at the kids who can afford karting at a young age, outside of, again, Lewis Hamilton, and they say, actually, these are all kids that were raised with privilege. We're not really overly interested in them as people or personalities. Where I think that F1, though, has such a huge advantage is a couple things. One is the sport, in terms of there's a danger level to these races, right, where there's going to be a crash. The stakes of an F1 race, when you're putting it into a little mini movie, a little sports documentary, they're always there and they're easy to understand. The stakes with a golf tournament, can you imagine them trying to kind of splice these things up? What is it going to be? Someone puts the ball in the water and they go, a hazard. And then a hazard. It's just, I don't know. It's hard for me to believe that that's going to be a big thing. And yeah, just golf needs this. They really do. And they clearly want this. But I'm also skeptical that they are going to be as unfiltered as a sport like F1 that seems to be a little bit above it. And two is, in F1, there really is genuine conflict between people. That's what's so compelling. It's a drama where you go, Toto hates Christian Horner. Those two guys hate each other. That rivalry is legit, legit, legit. What, we're going to build a Netflix series around Koepka and, like, Bryson? Do we really feel as though there's meat being left off the bone there? These guys are all friends with each other. They're all friendly with each other. What's the drama going to be? So maybe I'm underselling it. I'm certainly going to watch it. I'm going to watch every second of it. So I just don't think it's going to be this breakthrough hit just because they did it with F1. I actually think that golf is one of the sports that might need it the most from building their people, but also is going to have the least effectiveness in terms of building new fans.
Yeah, I think you're hitting on all the points of why it won't be as exciting for sure as the F1 documentary series. But I think the thing that I'm holding on to the most is, you're right, they need this the most. So think about, just like, I don't know much about the personal lives or what goes on behind the scenes of PGA golfers, because they seem boring. But I also didn't know anything about the F1 guys, and there was way more drama than I expected. I know that this is still like higher stakes and you know, it's a sport that seems more like sexy and different because it's in another country and we don't know much about the way they live. But I think golf can greatly take this as an advantage to grow the game. I hope that they sprinkle in some drama or something. Maybe they'll have Happy Gilmore or something.
I just don't think you can manufacture drama in these series. It's going to ring hollow if it doesn't feel real, if it doesn't feel legitimate. Are we going to have moments? Maybe, but I'm just a little skeptical. I'm curious to hear what Blake has to say about this, though, because he is the least golf fan out of the three of us. I would say that you're the most like all three of us were heading into the Netflix series, and you're not the person who I think, is like me, where you automatically just sign up for sports content, right? That this isn't usually up your alley. If there's things that you're kind of like looking forward to about something like this, or things that you're dubious of when it comes to this, what would they be?
Yeah, I mean, the big thing is, do you have the same level of personality you can get behind? And obviously the F1 not only has some advantages built in with the drama and danger of the sport, and kind of finding lightning in a bottle with, hey, you happen to do this right as Lewis and Max have one of the craziest head-to-head seasons like in F1 history, like almost literally the closest, and it comes down to the final lap of the season. Like, you can't really script it any better than that. Golf maybe has an advantage in terms of depth of characters, where you can go a lot of different directions. Like there might be 8-9 guys that you can kind of focus on and are in the mix week to week. Whereas, you know, by the midway point of the F1 one, from what you guys told me, it was still cool to get to know the other guys. But like at that point, the drama in the show from a competitive standpoint was Max and Lewis. Like, we knew it was going to come down to them. Whereas the PGA, especially in a year like this, where the way you guys teed it up last week and with some of the betting research that I did heading into that tournament, it feels like a pretty open year at the top, where, hey, if a couple of these guys click personality-wise and click on the course, like, there's maybe a greater depth of story options as you go through it. My biggest curiosity, though, is... for me, as like someone who doesn't pay a ton of attention to golf, who is, I think it's easy enough to make someone a compelling story as someone you want to root for. I think it's easy to get someone in your corner, but I'm really curious if they frame someone as more of a heel, more of a bad guy. And like, the, you know, in getting to know stuff this weekend, Cam Smith stands out as a natural option to be either the heel a lot of people like, someone they frame that way, at least. So I'm really curious to see how they take these kind of drier personalities, and, you know, you can't frame everyone as the good guy you want to root for, I don't think, anyway. I think it just runs a little hollow, and it runs a little thin if you do that. So I'm curious where the drama comes from in that regard.
So, again, a lot of these guys are friends with one another. Mm-hmm. To me, this is just a really good... This is where it's the best for golf. There's an incredible depth of field right now. There are a ton of incredible players on tour. You look at... There's a reason why when you're trying to bet a golf tournament right now, it's incredibly difficult, because there are so many unbelievable players. Golf has never been healthier from a depth of field standpoint, a who can win on a regular basis standpoint. It's also huge because golf really needs to try to find an identity outside of Tiger Woods. And and I don't mean that to a golf fan's perspective, because golf fans are always going to watch golf. I'm talking about to the greater public at large. As a national sport, what is golf's identity? It has been Tiger Woods basically my entire life. This is the first time where we're accepting a new reality of it isn't just about Tiger anymore. You need to make it about other people. So shining a light on these guys and trying to find a star, trying to build stars, trying to build different personalities, trying to give more access to this, it's interesting. There's also the thing with F1 is why it was so successful in part. Again, you get brought into a world, right? All of a sudden you're in just a world that is beyond anything that you understand, especially as a North American person. You don't get relate to being on yachts in Monaco and seeing what that life is like, or behind the scenes how those guys live, the cars that they drive, the ways that they the celebrity in which they carry, the import a guy like Lewis Hamilton carries from just a social awareness standpoint. Some of these things are monumental, but ultimately there is no team element to any of this, right? There's no dynamic between teammates like there is in F1. There's no actual team that's looking out for you, where there's an inner you're going to have the caddy and the golfer relationship. That's very, very one-sided. There's the power dynamic there is very clear. Mm-hmm. This is not like a team principal and a driver. There's no switching over of teams like there is in F1. The sport itself is just not very conducive to high drama video clips. It's just, it's hard for me to believe that it's going to be a smash hit, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's more to the golf world that I was not aware of, and that there are more figures on tour that are more compelling. Maybe there is more drama on tour. And if that is the case, if there actually is more competitiveness, if it is not basically the world's most exclusive country club, which is the way that I look at it, great. It can't be a bad thing. I'm just dubious of how great it could be, I guess, is a great way to sum it up.
Yeah, they got an opportunity to prove it. I don't know when the release date is, but it's obviously going to happen throughout this entire season filming. Maybe it'll actually keep us a little bit more in tune to be like, oh, I wonder how they'll cover that tournament, that storyline. So something to look forward to for sure.